episode of Magic the Prothering, the show where Magic the Amateuring says goodbye to the amateurs and hello to the pros.
Yes, this is, like all of our Prothering episodes, episode number 4.
Yes, indeed. It's always number 4.
Yes.
And we have a very exciting guest on the episode this week. Paolo Vito Damo de Rosa will be joining us. I'm really excited to have him on. Megan, how are you feeling?
Also very excited.
But before we do that, we have to say thank you to the people that make Magic the Prothering possible. And that includes all of you out there who are supporters on patreon.com/mtacast. Without you, this show would not be possible. It's kind of our thank you gift to you for being supporters and helping us create all the magic content that we create.
Yes, and thank you also to our sponsor, Card Kingdom, which you can visit in person in Seattle with your human body, or you can...
or, you know, your dog body if you happen to be half dog, half person.
Visit with your internet presence online at cardkingdom.com/mtacast.
They're great. They ship out cards super fast. And with a new standard season approaching us, you're going to want to go and check them out. Get the cards for your deck before anybody else does and then beat them with the best deck at F&M.
That's right.
Going to be great, you guys.
Classic plan.
Yeah. I'm going to have the best deck the soonest.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, all right, that business out of the way, let's say hi to Paolo.
Paolo's calling us all the way from Brazil because that's where he lives. Paolo's had a pretty amazing career, if you're not aware. I mean, he's basically one of the all-time greats of the game, in my opinion. You're Pro Tour Hall of Fame. You've got 10 Pro Tour top 8 finishes, 11 top 8s in a GP. Like, that's absurd. In a good way. Okay, so everybody, let's welcome Paolo to the show. Paolo, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us on Magic the Prothering.
Hi, hello. Thanks for having me.
Paolo, you're one of my favorite all-time Magic players, and I think a lot of other people as well. You were the youngest player when you're inducted into the Pro Tour Hall of Fame, and you've got a pretty great resume, including 10 Pro Tour top 8s and 11 GP top 8s, which is pretty insane when you think about it. And you said, is Owen about to take over as the youngest player in the Hall of Fame?
I think so.
Okay, so...
You can tell us if that's true.
Yeah.
If he's younger than you.
Yes, he's younger than me. That part is true.
All right, so you're about to be usurped.
I am, yes. So, yeah, since I've been inducted to right now, I've been the youngest member in the Hall of Fame, but in about a month, or less than a month, Owen would be the youngest player.
Yeah. Like, on the bright side, though, they're going to let you sit at the adults' table now when you guys have dinner.
I don't know about you, Megan, but I love sitting at the kids' table.
No, I agree. It's the better place to sit,
you get coloring books.
Yeah.
So, Paolo, the question we usually start with in these is just a little bit of your background. How did you get started playing Magic?
So I started when I was 8 years old, so 20 years ago. I read about Magic in a magazine that talked about Senseiya. Senseiya is an anime. It was quite popular in Brazil with kids my age. I don't know if you know about it in the US or not. And it had an advertising about this game. It was like an RPG with cards, and I thought it was really interesting because I liked dragons and wizards and I liked cards. I used to play cards with my mom and dad and my brother. So I was like, Mom, can you check this out? This sounds interesting. Can we go buy it? So she called the number that she saw in the magazine and found out where they had a store in Porto Alegre, which is where I live. So she went there with me and my friend and her, and we each bought a deck, my friend and I. And it was a fourth edition starter and a homelands booster. And then we just...
Wow.
Yeah, we just put those two together. You know, our decks were all the cards we owned. I think that's pretty normal for when you start. And then we just played against each other. And eventually our other friends from school started playing it. So we played against them as well. And I kept going to the store and meeting people there. And I realized there was a competitive scene. And then my friend eventually quit playing, and my school friend stopped playing, but I just never stopped. I just kept going to the store and continued playing, and I've never quit until today.
Awesome. Do you remember whenabouts you went to your first tournament? Like, how old you were? Like, how long it was after you started playing Magic?
I don't know for sure. I think it was probably, like, over a year after I started playing, but I was still really young. I think I was probably not 10 years old. I remember I had a Thicket Basilisk deck with Lure, which was, you know, the combo, you make them block off other creatures, you kill all their creatures. That was the deck. Solid. Yeah, that was the deck I played my first tournament with.
Were you one of those child geniuses that I play sometimes in GPs that's amazingly good and beats me?
I don't know. Probably not at eight. When you're eight, you're so young, you just have no idea what's happening. So, I mean, I was probably good for an eight-year-old. when I was 12, I was good for a 12-year-old. I don't know if it was like a child prodigy or something.
So I guess I'd like to know, as an American player in North America, what's the community like in Brazil for Magic? Is it pretty big?
It's big. It's not as big as in the U.S. I don't think any community is. It is not as big as you would think it is based on how big Brazil is, because Brazil is about the size of the U.S. There's like 200 million people. So if you're comparing to that, then no, the community is not big. But there's still a very big community. Like our PTQs in São Paulo, when we used to have, you know, normal PTQs, you didn't have to qualify for them. They had 300 people. And our GPs have like sometimes 1,000 people. So it's not a small community. It is very concentrated, though. Most of the players are in São Paulo. Most of the tournaments are in São Paulo. Then there's Rio, which is like closest to São Paulo, has some players too. Then there's Porto Alegre. There's some places in the north and northeast. But for how big Brazil is, there are a lot of areas that don't have any players or have one and two players. So yeah, we have a decent sized community, but it's very concentrated.
So you started playing when you're eight and you went to your first tournament about a year later. How did you decide that you were going to start trying to become a competitive player in playing this game professionally?
That's an interesting question. I don't think there was ever a moment where I decided that was what I wanted to do. When I was about 12 or 11, I started playing an online league. It was called Magic League. We played on Apprentice, which was a third-party software. And then, you know, they had online tournaments. I really liked those, and I would have friends coming over here, and would basically spend the night playing those tournaments together and talking about the plays and whatnot. And I really liked the competitive aspect of it. When I was 15, I qualified for my first world championship, and that was in Berlin. It was the first time I left the country. Then I managed to get a sponsor, and I went to the tournament, and I got top 64, which was good for $500 back then. And that was so much money for me, because I was a 15-year-old. I had never earned any money, and the dollar to Brazilian currency conversion rate is good for us. So it was, you know, who is 15 and earns $500? There's just nobody that I knew was even close to that. So I thought, well, wow, that's really cool. And then I started going to more tournaments, and I started doing well and well again. And eventually I finished school, and there came a time where I had to have a job, and it turned out that I already had one. So it wasn't as much as, you know, oh, this is what I want to do with my life. I'm going to start doing this as a job. I just kept doing it. And eventually when I needed a job, I didn't really need one because I already had one. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. What a great feeling to just be like, I should get a job. Wait a second.
Wait a moment.
I already have one. Nice.
Yeah, that was basically how it went. So it was very organic. It was just happened very naturally.
Yeah. It's like how I feel like lots of people kind of like fall into professions when they're done with school. But you happen to fall into a profession that was being a Magic player.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you being outside the U.S., you travel to a lot of U.S. GPs still, and then obviously you travel for pro tours and that sort of things. What do you think the challenges are to being a player that's lives outside of the United States and having to travel that much to go to tournaments?
I mean, it's much harder. There is no real way to say it isn't. First, it costs so much more. Like, if I have to travel for a GP, sometimes my tickets are $1,500, for example. Wow. That is just so much more than anyone else's tickets, right? And a lot of times, don't go to those tournaments because it's not economically viable. Then it takes a very long time. For example, I came back from Seattle. My flight was 40 hours.
So it's almost... Sorry, I just threw up in my mouth.
Like, I had three stops, and, you know, I had to go to a place that I had bad connections and stuff. So that part's really bad, but there's basically no way around that, I think. It's also bad in some other ways, for example, the visa issues. I don't know if you're aware, there was this big visa problem with PT Australia that everyone needed work visas. That's what we have to go through every time. Like, I know people from Brazil who won PTQs and just couldn't go through the GPs because they were denied U.S. visas. And at this point, there's just nothing you can do. Like, you just can't enter the country. So how can you ever be a Magic player? You just can't. And stuff like that. And it's also harder to get, you know, I happen to speak English, but a lot of people from Brazil and from other places don't speak English. So it's so much harder for those people to professionalize other aspects of Magic. Because, for example, writing articles is a very big part of a Magic player's income. But if you don't speak English, you can't do that. Like, you know, you have to have more than just a passing English knowledge to be able to write in English. And a lot of the time, there are interviews and features that they do with you that, you know, you become famous, you get more sponsors. But if you don't speak English, they don't do those. So all those things are, it really is much harder. Nowadays, for me, it's more expensive and I have to travel for longer. Yeah, but everything else is the same for me. But when you're just starting, it's much harder. You don't have many shots. Like, there is one GP in Brazil a year. There are years we didn't have any GPs. And so you went, you had that one tournament and you had to do well. And if you did badly, it took you a year to get another chance. And in the US, you had 20 GPs, you had like 10 PTQs. So you could afford to do badly. And if you were from here, you can't. If you do badly once, you have to wait an entire year to have your chance again. So yeah, it is much harder.
Yeah, and I can also imagine, like, GPs are already kind of intimidating for newer players. I can't even imagine, like, having to go to a new city and a place where, like, you don't necessarily speak the language or it's not your first language, and then also go to a GP in addition to that.
Wow, that's a lot to pile on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So given all of that and how much travel you do and how much you have had to do to continue to be a professional player, why do you keep doing it?
There are a lot of reasons. I think I like the people in it a lot. A lot of my friends are from Magic, and they're people that I would never have met if it wasn't for Magic. Like, you take our testing team, for example. There's Shuhei Nakamura. Shuhei is like 35 years old from Japan. And there's Andreas Trotsky, who's 21 from the Czech Republic. And then there's me, I'm 28 from Brazil. And, you know, when would those people ever meet if it wasn't for Magic? Like, how would we ever be in the same, like, we're in the same planet, but, you know, our lives would never touch if it wasn't for Magic. And there's such a big age discrepancy between Andre and Shuhei, but you don't really feel that because, you know, we're all just Magic players. It's a very interesting dynamic. And a lot of my friends come from Magic, so I would never see them if it wasn't for Magic, so that's part of why I keep doing it. And I really like the game. I think it's challenging, and I think I'm good at it, so it's a good opportunity for me. I like traveling. I don't like the flying aspect, but I like being in different places, seeing different cultures. But I think the thing that I like the most about Magic is the lifestyle that it lets me have. Because right now, I can wake up at any time I want. I practice if I want to or not. I can wear any clothes I want. You know, I'm basically in complete control of my life other than, you know, 2 days every 3 months that I have to be at a specific place to play in the tournament that I have to wake up at 8 a.m. I do anything I want with my time at any point. Like, I can spend a whole day playing League of Legends or watching a TV show or doing nothing. And I really like that. And it's very hard to find that in different jobs.
So true. My job will not let me watch TV all day. I've tried. It was not allowed.
And someday they'll have teleportation and we won't even have to be on planes. So that'll solve that issue.
Oh, thank goodness. I can't wait.
I dream of teleportation.
I think about it at least once every day.
You don't.
Don't I?
Do you?
Yes.
That's a lot.
So, Paulo, what's your favorite format and why?
It depends on what you're talking about. I think if I have to choose a favorite format, it's probably sealed deck, which is not one of the formats that pros usually like, but it's just so exciting to me to get a sealed deck and open and see what I have. Like, those moments leading up to the sealed deck where I get to, you know, see my deck and there's this puzzle I have to solve and I have 15 minutes to do it. It's very exciting to me. I really like that. From a competitive standpoint, I really like Legacy. I think Legacy rewards your decision-making much more than other formats. Because, for example, you play Standard. You're going to play a land turn one. It doesn't really matter which. Turn two, you're going to play a land and whichever two drop you have. And that's it. And in Legacy, you're going to play a land, but whichever land you play is already going to impact the game. Like, you have a meaningful decision. Then you have, you know, a choice of three different one drops, all of which give you different choices. So you could, for example, play land Brainstorm, put two different cards back, or someone else could play another land and play a Lightning Bolt. So there are like 10, 15 different ways a game of Legacy is going to play out on turn one, depending on who's playing. And in Standard, everyone will just go, land, play two drop. So Legacy is, I think it's very intricate. Like all your small decisions matter a lot in Legacy. I really like that.
Awesome. Do you have a Legacy deck that you prefer?
I like blue decks in general. So Brainstorm is the Legacy deck that I prefer. Nowadays, I like Miracles, but I haven't played Legacy in a while. I only play it for GPs. I haven't been to a Legacy GP in a while, so I'm kind of outdated. I haven't played with the new bands and whatnot. But yeah, I'm going to say Miracles, top counterbalance decks in general.
They seem pretty sweet. We have not played Legacy yet, but when we do, heading for blue decks.
What a surprise, Megan. What a surprise.
It's okay. In Legacy, it's going to punish me because you can mess up so hard. I'll just...
You can. Yeah, it is really hard.
I'm going to do terribly for a long time.
Is there like an aggro smash your face deck in Legacy?
There is. Yes. There is everything in Legacy. There are like 30. Legacy is like modern, but there are even more decks because there are more cards. But you can also play, like, there are blue decks that smash your face, like Delver.
Yeah, Delver
is a blue deck. It has Brainstorm, Force of Will, but it's also just a beatdown deck. You just want to play creatures and Lightning Bolt then. So you can have everything in Legacy.
How do you feel about that, Maria? You could play aggro and also be blue.
Wow. Yeah. I never felt this moment like this until this moment. I'm feeling confused and still a little scared.
It's going to be okay.
So another question that I personally like to ask Magic players that we have on this show is, what makes you a good Magic player? Why are you good at Magic? Why do you think you've succeeded as much as you have in this game?
So I think what I do better than most people is looking at the game as a whole, like forming a game plan that makes sense and using that game plan as a framework to base all my decisions on. Because, for example, when your opponent attacks a 2-2 into your 2-1, like do you block? It's usually not just a decision of which card is better, the 2-2 or the 2-1. There's also, you know, which card is more important for each person's game plan. What is my game plan? What is their game plan? And stuff like that. And I think a lot of people are just making individual decisions over and over, which is sometimes good enough. You know, you make individual decisions for each turn, and if they're the good decisions, then that's good. But sometimes you have to make bad momentaneous decisions because they're good for your whole game plan. And I think I'm really good at that. I think I'm really good at identifying, you know, the exact spots where I have to be aggressive, the exact spots where I have to be control-ish, and stuff like that. So just general game plan, general strategy, and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
What if you're a player who's trying to improve their game and has kind of felt like they've plateaued recently and they just want to take it up to the next level? What's kind of your number one tip to tell that person to become a better player?
I think it depends on where you've plateaued. But the number one thing I say is usually just, you know, compete. A lot of people, they go to tournaments, but they don't play, or they play only side events because they think they're not good enough. And they don't want to play and lose. But if you don't do that, you're just never going to win. I think, you know, going to a tournament and playing in a competitive environment, even if you lose, is just so much better for you than playtesting for a month with your friends, like in terms of getting better. Just being exposed to that environment, to players that are better than you, is just super, super valuable. So, yeah, my number one tip would be, you know, if you have a GP close to you or a PTQ or something, just go and compete, even if you don't think you're good enough. Like, you know, you don't have to win. You're just going to get better by just being there.
Yeah, this is something that I think I felt when we went to GP Minneapolis. It was my first Standard event. And I thought for sure I was going to lose every single match. I was like, I'm going to win maybe two matches. that's what I thought. And then I day two'd and I was like, what? What is going on? Like, so just everybody use my success story. I've never played a single Standard event. Like, it seems really scary. But if you just go and play, I think you'll find that you do better than you even think you will on average.
Yeah. Or at least you learn a lot. Or from
learn a lot
the next time you go. I would say that for me, most of the time I go to a tournament and I mess up horribly. I'm like, well, at least I'm going to remember that mistake.
Yes.
For a very long time.
that's the thing. When you do something badly in a tournament, you just remember it because it means more. So you're not going to make that mistake again.
Exactly. Whereas like on Magic Online, it's like, oh, if you play a league, you just play so many games and it goes a lot quicker and it's not as meaningful. So you don't necessarily remember all of those things that passed by.
I'm always going to remember which burn spells do 4 and which do 5. Let me tell you that. Ooh, it still hurts. Still hurts.
Maria tried to alchemist greeting a 5 toughness creature.
Oh, at the GP? Oh, no, yeah. The GP was there.
Yep.
Oh. It
didn't go well.
That creature didn't die. So we just had a new set come out, Kaladesh. How much have you played with it so far? What are your early thoughts on it?
So I haven't played with it at all. I skipped the pre-release, actually. I had some personal things I had to attend to, so I didn't go through pre-release. I looked over the set. I mean, I do pre-release premieres for Channel Fireball, so I had to look at all the cards and try to analyze how they were going to work with each other. But I don't have any personal experience with them yet. But it seems very interesting to me. I think it's quite powerful. Like, there are a lot of cards that you look and you think, oh, this card is definitely going to see play because it's so good. And then there are, you know, like there's a 5-mana 8/8 Trampler that you can split your, like Verdurl's Gearhawk, or you can just split Contra's. So it's just a very powerful card. It's going to see play no matter what. And then there are a bunch of cards that are like, oh, maybe this card is worth building around. So they wouldn't fit in any existing decks yet, but they're just, you know, they're interesting cards that do something that we haven't seen before, particularly energy-based cards, which is something we haven't seen in vehicles. So I like that. It has a lot of power and a lot of potential. I like potential in Magic sets.
Yeah. So people have been kind of generally very favorable first impressions of the new Chandra. Where do you fall on like the spectrum? Like overhyped, underhyped? Is it going to be great?
Exactly hyped, right?
Hyped exactly right?
Probably a little bit overhyped. I think it's going to be a great card. Like it's you know, obviously powerful enough to see constructive play. I don't think it's, you know, an automatic 4-off in every red deck. I think it's normal that in the beginning, you know, people are going to play a lot of the card to see if it's actually good. And then they're going to start cutting a little bit. So it would be very hard for it to be underhyped based on how hyped it was. So a card that is as hyped as Chandra was is probably always going to be a bit overhyped. But it's still a very good card.
What about, this is my question about a specific card, Smuggler's Copter, a.k.a. the Looter Scooter. How do you feel about that card?
That card is very good. I think probably underhyped, even though it's already being hyped. I have never played with it, but I think it's very good. It's going to be a player for it. I mean, you can play it in almost any deck that has creatures. It's just a very, very powerful card. It's different than Chandra. There are metagames in which it would be great and metagames in which it would be bad. And we don't know which one is going to be yet. I mean, what if everything has 5 toughness? Then Chandra is going to be bad because it's not going to do anything. But that card is just, it's going to be good, I think, is how I feel. It doesn't really depend on anyone else, what anyone else is doing. You just, if you play a deck that is good, and it's going to be good.
So when you're testing coming up before a pro tour, what's your role on the team? Are you the deck builder? Are you the one who makes breakfast in bed in the morning? What is it?
Well, not the breakfast one. I don't think we really have roles, to be honest. We all basically do everything. Like, we all come up with certain ideas and we test them and then, you know, we discard them or we tell everyone, hey, this is good, let's work on it. And we all tune existing decks, so we all basically do everything. I like to think I'm a bit of the reality checker. Like, people get overexcited too much, I think. And I'm usually the negative person as opposed to the positive person. You know, everyone is like, oh, if this works and I draw those 5 cards together and my opponent has nothing, this card is great. And I'm like, yeah, but what if they have this? The card does nothing. You know, I'm always the person that is raining on the parade. So this is kind of like my thing. I'm not always right, but yeah, I tend to look at things on a more negative side. So if I had a role in the team, I guess it would be that. It would be not letting people get carried away by best case scenarios.
We basically all do everything.
Yes, that is my title.
The Debbie Downer.
That one's an actual phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Parade Raider, though, also great.
Yeah. Thank you. So do you have any goals for this upcoming season? It just started. We're about to hit the first pro tour of the season. Anything that you're looking to accomplish?
I would really like to do well in general. I think there are no goals I have specifically for this season. It's just the same goals I always have, which are reaching platinum and playing the world championship. If those two things happen, I'll be happy with my season. If I have like some sort of bigger goal, it would be to win Worlds. That would be, if I had to choose one title to win, that would be the one I would like to win more than Player of the Year, more than a PT. That would be really important to me. But obviously that's just, it's hard to have something as unrealistic as your goal. Like, it's just such a hard tournament. So yeah, so if I mean, that's what I want to happen. But as for realistic goals, yeah, being platinum and making it to Worlds.
If you could change one thing about Magic, what would you change and why?
I don't know. Am I allowed to say, like, prize money?
You're allowed to say anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would love for Magic to be in a scenario where people look at what I do and they're so insanely jealous that I make so much money, like I think with those League of Legends people. You know, that would be the dream to me. I don't, obviously, like, I wouldn't just be able to do that. Even if you put, like, even if I bought Wizards, I, you know, that would not be something that I would do, likely. But, yeah, I don't know, as, like, in realistic changes, I don't know what I would change. I would have to think more about it. Because everything has so many consequences that, you know, I could be like, oh, I would ban Blood Moon, you know, something I would probably do, but I don't really know if I should be doing. So it's just too much responsibility.
No, it's true though. Blood Moon can suck it.
Like, Blood Moon's the worst. No, everybody hates Blood Moon.
Yeah, who likes Blood Moon? I don't want to waste my one thing on banning Blood Moon, though.
No, so. That's fair.
If a genie comes...
We are, in fact, a genie.
And gives you a wish, banning Blood Moon. No,
crap,
that was
crap,
my wishes.
No. That wasn't what I meant to say. I just unplugged my headphones. But I get it. Like, with the prize money, like, you want to be, like, the 15-year-old version of you winning $500 again. But, like,
yes,
now.
I would like to be, you know, right now, you could say that I'm a Magic famous person. And I would love to be just a famous person. You know, I would love for me to, like, when I leave my house, there's someone trying to take a picture of me. And, you know, you can see, like, features about me, you know, oh, Paolo went to the movies and saw this film of his family. And somehow it's noteworthy because it's me. Like, that, yeah. I would really like that. I think it's not going to happen, but, yeah,
oh,
I think that would
totally
be really
legit.
Cool.
You're, like, one of the only people who wants the paparazzi to follow them.
Exactly.
Camping out in your bushes.
Maybe it would get old very quickly. Like, it's possible that, you know, I would like to reverse it if it ever came to that. But, yeah, just, you know, being famous, and not only Magic famous, like, because right now, like, I'm really good at this thing, but, like, even my family doesn't really know how good I am or, like, how, you know, how much success I've had. For example, there is my brother, he has, like, a barbershop. And someone went there and they were talking and he mentioned that he played Magic. And then my brother's like, oh, yeah, my brother plays that too. But you probably don't know him. It's Paolo. And then the guy goes, of course I know him. And then they were talking to me and they're like, yeah, you just my brother just has no idea. Like, I know everyone that lives here and plays Magic.
Yeah.
And he just like, oh, I didn't know you. I didn't see why you would ever know him. So
that's so funny.
I love the vote of confidence from your brother. Like, yeah. You don't know my brother. No, it's fine.
Yeah. So, I mean, it would be good if it was, you know, oh, yeah, my brother plays. You definitely know him. You know, you've probably seen him on TV a bunch of times. And that would be really cool.
Have you ever considered hand painting a banner and pasting it up above your brother's house that says, your brother is a world famous Magic player?
I haven't considered that, but maybe I will now.
I think it would really get the point. Yeah. No, but that makes, like, a lot of sense. I think of, like, that could be true for a lot of pros because you spend a lot of time and you work really hard on this goal. And it's really cool to be acknowledged within the magic community. But at the same time, when it only goes that far, it's sort of like, I work so hard on this, you know. It would be nice if the wider world knew.
Yeah, and I'm not saying I deserve the wider world to know. You know, it's not something that I feel is unfair to me. I definitely like what's happening right now, and I think it's perfectly understandable. But if I could choose for something to change, it would be that.
Yeah.
Yeah. My parents call our podcast a blog.
Yes.
Consistently. So, I understand.
Yeah. My mom at least knows what a podcast is.
She is ahead of the test.
She really is. She's savvy. So, oh man, sorry, my brain was just like took a pause for a second. Go.
That's okay. I can psychically guess what you were going to ask.
Go for it.
If you could be any card in Magic, yes. What would you be?
Okay, so actually, I thought really hard about this question. I would definitely be a wizard because I like to just do magic. Yeah. And I would definitely fly, because that's the one superpower that I would have if I could choose. Not teleportation, not flying. And so I looked out over the list of wizards that fly on Gather, and I think I would probably just be Vendilion Click. It's just, you know, this kind of like mischievous thing, but they're wizards, they fly, they're fairies, but, you know, fairies are great. And it's also a card that I really like. It's my favorite card in Magic. Like, I think it's, you know, it's very cool. It's a lot of options. It's at a great power level. I play it in all my decks. So, yeah, it would be that. It would just be a flying thing that does magic and happens to be really good.
Awesome. That's awesome. It's such a good choice.
That's a really good answer.
Yeah. So. Not only is it what you aspire to be if you could fly, but also it's your favorite card. Like, I love Ixava Rakdos Blood Witch, but at no point in my life do I want to become an actual Blood Witch. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm Treasure Cruise. I would become a boat. I'd be a boat.
The pirate ship?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. If a genie came by and was like, I'll make you a boat, I'd be like, sure.
No, you would not.
That's true, I wouldn't.
Do you want lots of barnacles hanging onto your butt? Because that's what's going to happen to you if you're a boat.
No.
That's what a boat has to live with, Megan.
I don't think boats identify their butts.
Well, it's where you and I differ.
Fair enough. So tell us something that we don't know or that the wider magic community might not know about you. Like, do you have any hobbies besides magic?
I do. I mean, I watch and play a lot of League of Legends, but that's not that exciting. I guess a lot of the magic people do that. Two things that I do that you maybe don't know. First, I play Bridge. Bridge is another type of card game that mostly older people are famous for playing.
Yes.
But, but it's old a really British great people. Game. Yeah. Yeah, basically. It's a really great game, and I went to the Junior World Championship for Bridge. In China a couple years ago, so it was something that I really like. I'm really passionate about. I'm not good, like I'm reasonable, but I really like it.
Well, if you go to the World Championship, I'd say you're pretty good.
Well, junior World Championship.
Yeah, but I heard that for Bridge, junior means that you're under 40.
It's 25. What? Under 25.
Okay. It's under 60 is the junior league.
60 and below is the junior league.
Who's your partner?
Well, I don't have a partner, which is why I don't play that much. But when I went to China, we just rotated. It was really bad because we were five people and teams are either six or four usually. And then, so we didn't have a set partner. We were just kind of figuring out on the fly. So it wasn't really the accomplishment that, you know, going to the World Championship makes it sound like. But it was still really cool. I really like it. And the other thing I do is I play volleyball. Which is, everyone just looks at me weirdly. I think in volleyball, in the U.S., it's mostly women playing volleyball. I don't know, everyone says it's a women's sport I mention it.
I wouldn't say that.
I would disagree with those people.
Okay, but everyone's just like, what? You know? And by the way, volleyball is awesome. I used to play in school for the school team, and then I play, when I'm here, I try to play every week with my friends. It's the one sport that I actually like to play and watch. Everything else I despise. It's the only movement thing that I like to do is playing volleyball. So, yeah,
no,
I really, really like it.
And you've got probably a sweet beach to play it on or something.
Oh, not beach volleyball, court volleyball. I don't actually like beach volleyball that much.
Okay.
I don't leave by the beach, so, and also it's just so hard to move. Have you ever played beach volleyball?
I have to say that I have, and the only reason I liked it a little bit more is because I'm terrified of falling on the floor.
Oh.
And in beach volleyball, I'm like, well, it's not that hard.
Yeah, but beach volleyball, like, you see the ball coming up, and you're like, oh, yeah, I'll definitely get that in time. And then you're like, you two steps, and it's on the floor. We're like, what happened? You know, it's just sand. It's so hard to move in. And sometimes you go and catch the ball, and you stop the ball, but you don't stop the sand. So the ball and the sand just goes all in your eye. I don't like it, but I do like volleyball.
So in the Magic community, we're known for loving karaoke. Do you have some karaoke go-to songs that you're known for?
No, not really. I like karaoke a lot, but I have a problem with karaoke. The type of songs that I like aren't the most karaoke friendly. Like, there are, you know, songs that everyone likes to sing along and that everyone knows the lyrics to. I just like some obscure, like, slower songs. So I'm always in a conundrum. Like, do I sing the song I want to sing that everyone's going to hate me for? Or do I just sing something that, you know, that anyone would sing? So,
I
don't really have one go-to song.
Always sing the slow song. There always needs to be the person who sings that song, because everybody needs to take a break for a second. Everyone just needs to chill out.
If you sing a slow song, I will do a middle school slow dance.
Just by yourself.
By myself.
With an invisible partner.
Out in the audience.
With there the you go.
That's a Maria Bartholdi guarantee.
Yep, it sure is.
She promised it. It's recorded. Now you know.
Megan, have you been working on some karaoke tunes?
No.
I looked at her like, I don't believe you.
What do you usually sing?
Let's see. I am a particular fan of the late 90s boy bands.
You sing Jimmy Eat World?
Yeah, Jimmy Eat World or Blink 182. You know, my vocal range just really mimics a 90-year-old boy band lead singer. So
I get it.
If I were to describe my vocal range, that's what it is.
So when Megan and I were both recently at the World Championship, and I was back in the kind of the green room for the players, and I noticed a giant jar of Nutella in there, and I wondered if perhaps it was a specific request from somebody who loves Nutella, and I found out it might be you.
Oh, I didn't request for it specifically, but...
But it was there!
But someone knew.
It was there. I mean, yeah, I definitely took ownership of it. I don't think anyone else ate it. I think I was the only person that ate it. I ate almost all of it.
Oh my gosh. It's impressive.
I really like Nutella a lot. It's, yeah, so maybe they put it there because of me. That would be really cool, really thoughtful. But yeah, I was really surprised, happily surprised that it was there. Yeah, I didn't request it.
You know, I have to say, I'm really sorry if this, you have to stop talking to me after this, but growing up, I always thought something was wrong with me because I don't like Nutella.
What?
I know. I thought I was supposed to.
But it's chocolatey.
I know, but there's hazelnut in it. Oh. I can't handle it.
Whoa,
hazelnut. I'm sorry if you need to end the Skype call. I can get up and go. You can just finish talking to Maria.
He's out.
I get it.
Well, I can tell you that you're wrong, but you're allowed to be wrong because you know what? Freedom.
Yeah. But do you like other things like Nutella, like chocolate, hazelnuts, or you just specifically don't like Nutella?
I like hazelnuts. I hate hazelnuts. Anything with hazelnut in it. You can go straight to heck, you guys.
It's like the way I hate olives. I hate anything in what I call the olive family, which in my brain encompasses pickles.
What?
Yes.
I think you're just wrong about that.
Olives and pickles, the same taste in my mouth.
Really don't.
That's really incorrect.
Yeah, this is not one of those agree to disagree things. No. It's just factually wrong.
That's not an opinion you can have. That's a factually incorrect sentence.
Are you getting excited? Are you going to be in Atlanta or are you just going on to Hawaii?
Just going to Hawaii. Yeah, okay. And I was just stopping in San Francisco for 2 days to watch the beginning of the League of Legends World Championship. Since it's kind of underway and I really like it. But then, yeah, straight to Hawaii and straight back.
Very cool.
Are you excited for Hawaii?
I am, yeah. I really like Hawaii. Hawaii is great.
Yeah, you've been to a lot of PTs at this point. Are there any cities in particular that you really love as Pro Tour or GP sites?
I think Hawaii is one that I really like. San Diego is really good because it's convenient, close to the airport, the weather is great, there's a lot of food options. But Hawaii is just different. With Hawaii, you get all the like exotic thing. You know, you're in a place that no one ever goes to, and it's just really interesting. And like all the nature thing. But you also get a lot of civilization. Like, it's still the U.S. You know, everyone's phones still work. Like, the legal things are all the same. People speak the same language. So I think Hawaii is a great combination of just... is a thing that works. I think they think it works, too. That's why they just put a lot of PTs in Hawaii. But yeah, it would probably be my favorite PT location.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, that's all I have for you today. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on Magic the Prothering, Paulo.
Yeah, thank you for having me.